As you can see, Owen didn't come. So over to you, Badger. Or you call yourself from us, so how I know you. Over to you.
Yeah, I'm Robert. I'm an addict.
Hey, Robert.
My fellowship nickname is the Badger. I'll tell you why I was called the Badger. When I was about 16 years of age, I had a grey streak in my hair. And basically, it's called the Malin streak. And I mean, you know, that was it. When I was 16, I got this grey streak in my hair. The girls loved me. So what happened, when I came to the fellowship a long, long, long time ago, I had this grey streak in my hair. And basically they said, you are the Badger. And now I'm all grey and I'm still the Badger. Okay, before I forget, I want to say this. I love drugs, all right? I love them with a vengeance. First drug I had was alcohol when I was 9 years of age. Basically, we used to get flagons of cider and we used to drink them in the back of burnt out cars in a place called Latimer Road. Some of you might know where Latimer Road is. And basically, that was my first drug. I got introduced to amphetamines, mother's little helpers we used to call them, when I was 12 years of age, okay? So basically, those are my first two drugs. And then after that, basically, I got introduced to a wonderful drug. I'll tell you what it was. It's called mephedrine. Now, mephedrine now is throughout the world, and it's now known as crystal meth. And I was given an injection of this stuff, and I just loved it. Anyway, the government took it off the market by an act of parliament. It went wildfire through the working classes. Everyone was sewn out of their heads. You know, we used to go out clubbing, and basically you'd be walking along, you got your mohair suit on. Remember them mohair suits? They'd give me one, and they'd just give you a syringe in your arm as you're walking along. So, there you go. Anyway, really simple. I'll tell you my using story. So basically, I discovered a wonderful drug early on. Forget that, it doesn't matter. No, so basically I was taking heroin by the age of 17. Basically, I loved it. I enjoyed it. I got introduced to my profession. I was in a working girl's flat in Queensway, and I met up with two people. One guy was called Pooksy, and he was a Jamaican drug dealer, and the other one was called Tommy, and Tommy's profession was he used to bust chemists. And I met them both on the same day, and basically Eric laid on me 1,000 tabs of clear light acid. Now, clear light acid was one of the greatest LSDs ever produced. And basically, people, I was selling it, and people were cutting them in fours and sending it on, all right? And that was how I was introduced. Anyway, so that man became my drug dealer. I didn't go to school, in all honesty, you know, that's a thing I need to say. I never went to school, you know, I mean, basically in my day, I went to Holland Park and used to sign in the morning and then used to walk out, and we used to go to a guy called Ricky Foster's house in South Kensington, smoke dope and listen to Rolling Stones, bloody Led Zeppelin and, you know, whatever, and basically drop a few tabs, you know, whatever. And basically, I never went. Anyway, I left school with one qualification. I had a CSE grade 1 in history, and that was the only qualification I had from my schooling. So my using became quite interesting. You know, basically, this my drug dealer, Pooksy, used to walk in. And I'll tell you the story about Tommy. That's an interesting story. Okay. He just died this week, actually. His name's Calvin. And Calvin was an American Chinese guy who discovered David Bowie. And basically, he's had a flat in Lower Sloane Street in Chelsea. And basically, I remember going there this particular day, and I went in there, and I could hear these noises coming in as I walked in. And there was a woman there, and Tommy, enjoying this woman. And basically, anyway, he jumped off the bed and he's pulled out this brown leather suitcase and he's opened it. It's just every form of drug you can imagine. And I thought, oh, so that was my start up with Tommy. Okay, Pooksy, I can't tell you what Pooksy did because people wouldn't believe it. But anyway, Pooksy used to walk in, and by that time, I had my first flat after leaving home in Overton Crescent. That's down the road from Harrods, if people want to know. That was my first flat, and then from there we moved to a flat in Portman Square, a basement flat in Portman Square off the King's Road. And basically he used to walk in and he would throw me 8 ounces of heroin. And in those days, to give you an idea, most of it was Chinese heroin. It was produced by the Chinese. And it used to come in bags, half-ounce bags with a label on it. Three elephants was the best. They had red dragons as well, but three elephants was the best. And he'd walk out, and about 4 or 5 days later, he'd come and I'd give him the money. And basically, I was able to basically acquaint myself with the rich and famous of London, and that's what I did. I supplied the rich and famous. And I'll give you an idea, during my using, when I was in Portman Square, I used to be able to walk down the street, and if I saw one person on the King's Road who was stoned, I knew them. That's how rare drugs were in those days. This is the 70s, yeah? Do you hear me? This is the 70s. So that was my story. Anyway, that all came to an end one day. I'll tell you what happened. I remember we walked out, Pooksy, me and the girl who 12-stepped me to this program. Her name was Angie. She's just celebrated 42 years. Basically, we walked out this particular day onto Portman Square, and there was a guy with a camera. In those days, it was called C11, Criminal Intelligence. And basically, we jumped into an Avenger car, and we drove to Heathrow Airport. And there was a motorbike on our tower the whole way. Anyway, when I got back that night, he rung me from Jamaica and he said, they're on you, get out. And basically, I heard him and I went out and basically, I jumped in a black cab, that's what we did. Me and Andrew jumped in this black cab and we drove it to a place just opposite Emperor's Gate, the block of flats opposite Emperor's Gate, for he was a record producer of the names that I'm not going to bother you with the names. He was a great record producer though. And of course, how did he die? Liver cancer. So basically, I jumped out of this cab and I had about 1/2 ounce of weed in my pocket and I threw it in the bumper of this car, of this cab. And basically the cab driver got out and just took the thing out of the bumper and gave it to the cops. So we had been busted already. Anyway, when we got there, they put us in the cells and basically they found 8 ounces of, I think it was 1/2 ounce of heroin in Andrew's coat. And we got done. And I went to court for that. Anyway, I walked out. What can I tell you? I walked out. Oh, cool. So my using went on and on and on. And I'll give you some classic drug stories, okay. I used to basically be supplied by Colombians before the cartels, all right? Before the cartels. And they used to have this rock cocaine. If you can imagine it, you would open the packet and it was just like looking at diamonds, a whole sheen of diamonds, and it was classic Colombian rock cocaine. And basically, this particular day, I'd been delivered 8 ounces of it, and I remember the guy's name, his name was Hernan, and he delivered these 8 ounces of cocaine to me, and I had all the people in the sitting room in this flat, and basically, everyone came in and I sold all this stuff. Anyway, as soon as it does, no mobile phones in those days, landlines, the phone's ringing and ringing and ringing. Don't like it, don't like it, don't like it. Bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. Got it all back, and I went across to the chemist, and I got a kilo of lactose, and I cut each ounce with a quarter of lactose. Sold it all back to them. Never had cocaine so good. All right, you hear me? Never had cocaine so good. Okay? Now, one of the byproducts of my love of Colombian rock cocaine is I've got a hole straight through my septum. And now I sometimes do suffer from bad nosebleeds, and that's one of the consequences of my using. All right, so that's my using. Anyway, cut a long story short, I was busted in 1980. I had a flat in Portland Road. Do you know where Portland Road is? Portland Road is an amazingly rich person's road in Notting Hill. It's where Julie's Wine Bar, if any of you might know who it is, okay? Anyway, I had this flat in thing, and this guy, his name was Tommy. He appeared, and he gave me 8 ounces, laid them on me, and walked out. And I'm looking out the window like this, and there's a guy with a radio outside. Next thing is, I threw myself against the door and they smashed a hole through the door, all right? Literally smashed a hole through the door and I'm on the door. And I ran over and I tried to throw it away. Of course, I didn't throw it away. Anyway, I got busted. Anyway, at that time, there was, I think, 3 or 4 detoxes in the whole of England. 3 of them were in London, 1 was in Ashdown, in Bexley Hospital, Kent. 1 was at the Maudsley, and I think another one, I can't remember the third one, but anyway, there was 3. Anyway, I ended up in this place, in a detox centre called Ashdown Ward. And I went in there, and I went in there for a really, really simple reason. Shall I tell you the reason why I went there? I didn't want to meet someone called Judge Friend. Now, Judge Friend was the sitting judge at Knightsbridge Crown Court, and his way of greeting people, he was a Quaker. He used to say, "My name is Judge Friend, and I'm no friend of yours." And his favourite hobby was to give people 5 years. So that's why I went into this detox centre. I'll give you an idea of what my brain was like that at that time. I couldn't even remember my own telephone number. All right, I couldn't even remember my own telephone number. I'm in this detox centre. Anyway, so basically, I came out of there and avoided Judge Friend and circuit judge. And all my packets, let me tell you, all my packets were all pornography. So basically, the funny thing is, this particular judge would be saying to me, "Can I see Exhibition 4? He loved it, you know what I mean? Anyway, so basically the bottom line of it, he, in his summing up, this particular circuit judge, says, "I know a lot of Tommies." He said, "I have no idea where they live and what car they drive." And basically, for intensive supply, you know what I got? I got 200 hours of community service, because he was what is called nowadays an agent provocateur. He has set me up. So that was that. Anyway, after that event happened, this lady, her name is Andy, she contacted me and she said, "Robert, you got a drug problem. You need to go to these meetings." And I went to my first meeting. It was Hampstead Heroes on a Wednesday night. It still goes to this day. And I went there. And there was about 60 people in this meeting. There's a lot of people, very few meetings. When I started going to the fellowship, there was 5 meetings in the whole of the UK. And I went to this meeting, and basically they told me a really simple thing. They said, "Just keep coming back." And that's the only thing I remember from that first meeting. But I kept on coming back. And I met up with our founding member. His name was Johnny H. Crowbar Johnny, you know. And basically all I did was I kept on coming to the meetings, and he kept on telling me, keep coming back. That's all he kept on saying to me, keep coming back, keep coming back. By a miracle, this particular day, I remember I was on the phone for about 8 hours ringing all the so-called drug agencies that were available in those days. And of course, this is 1985. I'm ringing all these drug agencies and basically all going, thank you, bye, thank you, bye, thank you, bye. Eventually, I got through to a place I call now Miracle Mansion. And I rang them and they said, you're on our waiting list, just keep calling us. Anyway, this particular day, the phone rings. I answered the phone, and it's a lady at the other end, and her name is Helen, I remember her name, and she said, Robert, we got a place for you, you can come in tomorrow. I said, Helen, I've got really bad, bad news. She said, what's that, Robert? I said, tomorrow's my birthday. She said, if anyone else had said that but you, Robert, she said, you would be at the bottom of the waiting list. She said, you can come in on Monday. And I went in there on the 28th of January, 1985, and I've been here ever since. All I've done in this time, let me just tell you, I've got something I want to, I'll give you a quote. All I've ever done in this time is three things. I'll tell you what they are. I haven't died, I haven't used, and I've kept on coming back. And that is it. If you're new in this program, just remember those three things. That's all you have to do if you want to be old and grey like me. Okay? Okay, and so look, I'll give you this. The only person who ever will be truly happy is he who saw and found how to serve. That's by a guy called Albert Schweitzer. And I love that quote. That was my quote just for today, okay? So basically, all I ever did, you know, during that time, I always went to, I never ever stopped going to meetings. I did stop a little one last year at some point. I didn't get on with those Zoom meetings. I'm sorry, they didn't appeal to me, I'm sorry. All right, I'm very pleased we got face-to-face meetings back again. But I've always come to meetings, and the other thing I've done is I've always tried to carry the message. Always, always tried to carry the message. And you know, and I love service. I got involved in H&I very early on. James and I, we started a meeting at that Ashdown Ward many, many years ago, and some of our members are long, long, long time years from that meeting that we started, James and I. And basically, that was the first service commitment I got. And I remember going to this H&I meeting. I didn't even know what H&I was. Johnny said, come to this meeting. Anyway, I went to that. That was my first H&I meeting. It was in Hammersmith. And basically, all I did was that. And Johnny was a true gentleman. I mean, basically, he started this fellowship. Everyone says it's Dudley and him. It wasn't. Johnny went out there and started meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. That's what he did. And he kept on doing it. And that was a very similar story to me. Oh, let me tell you the story of my ex-wife. As I said, I love drugs. Anyway, I started skin popping street drugs, which is not a good idea, all right? Not a good idea. Couldn't find many veins. I mean, I want to put a picture on Facebook of my hands, and my hands are a symbol of my love for a drug called Dicanol. Anyone remember what Dicanol were? Okay. I used to sit in the bar and stick it in my feet, in my hands, wherever I could, you know, but I used to love the rush from Dicanol. Okay, my ex-wife. Anyway, so this particular day, my arm is swollen like that. It's enormous, bright red. And I go to Hammersmith Hospital, I sit there and wait, and eventually this doctor comes, calls me in. I show him my arm. He jumps out of the seat. He grabs a magic marker. He walks across the room and he drew a line on my arm. He said, if it goes above that, I'm amputating your arm. Oh, thanks, that's all right, no problem. He said, also, I want some blood out of you. I go, go on then. And he's coming at me with this green needle that long, you know, and he takes it from my femoral. Week later, I go back to see him. First thing he says to me, you are dead. I said, what are you talking about? I'm here. He said, you are dead. He said, the only thing that's kept you going is you were born with physical strength. He said, you are dead. He said, you have alcoholic hepatitis. You're going to die from cirrhosis of the liver. I'll give you no more than 3 months to live. Thank you. Anyway, I'm walking down Lancaster Road, in Ludbrook Road. I look up and there's this really beautiful woman at the top of the stairs. And I ran, just to give you an idea, I'm carrying my drugs and my syringes in a carrier bag. That's how many I've got, all right? I'm scripted with so many doctors, I had to keep a diary to remember all the doctors. I'm scripted with DF1 and 8, Valium. That's all I got. Loads and loads of them. Used to work there. Anyway, so that woman became my wife and the mother of my 3 children. So you'd want to know that miracles don't happen? Believe me, they do, all right? So all I did during those days was I went to meetings, I worked the steps, I did what I had to do, and I did service. And basically I took the meeting in Wormwood Scrubs. The first time I did it for 9 years on the run. Second time, doesn't matter how long I do it for, but I used to love that meeting. I used to treat that meeting in Wormwood Scrubs as my home group, because basically it was just an amazingly good experience. Okay, how many of you newcomers here? People cleaning, you're new, yeah? Hey, there's a few down there, all right, lovely. Right, things to do. As I've already told you, don't die, don't you, keep coming back, all right? That's the simple stuff, all right? Second one, be grateful. I remember telling Angie telling me to be grateful. I said, what have I got to be grateful for? And okay, of course, I've had experiences in my life where I've even thanked the parking warden for giving me a ticket, all right? Because if you're not grateful, you're in trouble. So if you're new in this program, please, please be grateful. All right, higher power, God of my understanding. I found that sometime, I don't know where I was in Ludbrook Grove, I remember that, and I woke up, I'm walking along, and it suddenly dawned on me, I'm not alone. He is the Father, and I'm one of these kids. And I came to believe in the God of my understanding. And I'll tell you what my God of my understanding is, all right? God of my understanding is if you sit outside at night, you look at the stars. Well, let me give you an idea. They lost count of the number of stars like the sun in the universe when they got to 1,000 billion. To give you an idea of the size of the universe. Should I tell you the madness of it is? It just keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Crazy world? That's my higher power, all right? That's my higher power. So every day I do certain things. I'll tell you what I do. I say my prayers. I say my prayers in the morning. I say my prayers at night. I do a thing called the Fountain of Youth, which is 21 exercises, which I do every day, and I do Tai Chi every day. And those things keep me fit and ticking. And I come to meetings. Okay, sponsorship. Oh, let me tell you a little bit about sponsorship. I've had some weird experiences with sponsorship. I was sponsored by a man. Anyway, and my youngest son, his name is William, he's playing with my mobile phone. And anyway, he sent a text to someone on my phone called Bernard, and he thinks it's his friend Bernard, and he sent him a text. Next thing is, the guy who was sponsoring me at that time, who sponsored me for 18 years, he sacked me. Of course, what was it? It was a Roman Catholic priest. And of course, this 9-year-old boy just contacted him and he couldn't handle it and he sacked me. And from him, I went into, after him, I went to a guy who is known as our silent founder member of this fellowship. He was the person who brought the literature, got the first literature for Dudley and Johnny for the first meeting in 1980. And he became, anyway, I fell out with him as well, and now I've got so this was, now I've got, now this is my, now my fourth sponsor, because the first one, yeah, my first sponsor died a long, long time ago, but there you go. And now I've got someone, he's 40 years clean, and I love him a lot, he's good. I don't bring him as much as I should, but there, that's another story. How am I doing for time?
8 minutes.
All right. Okay, yeah, so I hope I've kept you entertained. You know, basically, there's nothing easy in this program. All we got to do is be involved and be nice to people. Now, I love it. Let me just say this. I love the wee version of the Serenity Prayer. And unfortunately, I often say it when everyone else is saying I. But the bottom line of it, I think this fellowship should all use the wee version. Of course, any service commitment that you do in NA or AA, for that matter, what do they use? They use the wee version. Why don't we use it? I don't understand. That baffles me. I'm sorry about that. That baffles me. You know, what can I say? You know, I'm old and I'm poor and I've got aches in my body today. But basically, I'm still here. I've had a life. What can I tell you? I've had a life. You know, I worked for the same man, I worked for the same guy for 16 years. And I had two service commitments while I was working for him, Wormwood Scrubs, and I also used to take the meeting in Gladstones. And he, without fail, he would just let me just walk out of the office and go and do my commitments. Anyway, the last story I'll tell you. Anyway, one of the bad problems I had was I couldn't say no to my children and my beautiful ex-wife. And I ran up a huge debt. I had so many credit cards, you can't believe. On a Saturday morning, I used to sit in the room and I used to transfer one credit card to another. That's what kept me going. Anyway, this particular day, I got a call. It was from a guy from American Express, and he said, "We're going to bankrupt you." I said, "Oh, thanks, that's nice." Anyway, I'm sitting with my old boss, whose name was Mick Sullivan, and Mick just turned around. Anyway, Mick paid out £21,600 to American Express to stop them bankrupting me. I think 2 weeks later, the same guy rings me back and he goes, "We got a second card for you. You owe us £6,000 on that." So I went into a thing called APR, which is the one below bankruptcy. And I paid them all off, all my debts off. I paid £100,000 worth of debts off, and I paid Mick Sullivan back his £21,600. So you want to know about miracles, please believe me, just keep coming back. All right, okay, I'm going to love you and leave you, listen. But I was sponsored by a guy called Andre. Now Andre is very, very famous in AA. But basically he was my sponsor. And I used to go to a meeting in the old Marylebone Road, and this is what I always used to say. When a man or woman comes to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, The heavens fall silent and God listens, because the dignity of a human being is about to be restored. Thank you.